The North American continent, to which the settlers were now heading, was still a mystery to Europeans. Not least in the settlers' ignorance was the lack of information about the inhabitants. Superficial contacts had been made, but the numbers, location, and culture of the American Indians were largely unknown. Since the American Indians left no written records and few cultural relics, knowledge of them is still limited today. It is generally agreed that their ancestors came from Asia by way of the Bering Straits between 20,000 and 40,000 years ago, when the Ice Age had lowered sea levels and created a bridge between the two continents. Estimates of the number of people living in North America above the Rio Grande at this time range from 2 million to 10 million. It is also generally agreed that the American Indians went into catastrophic decline because of diseases brought by European visitors. Smallpox, malaria, measles, yellow fever, and typhus were all unknown in 15th century America and had a disastrous effect when they began to appear, because the inhabitants initially had no immunity. A single epidemic disease could devastate an entire community. Crops were unattended, and the game not hunted. While the sick were left to fend for themselves, the population of Mexico was estimated to have been reduced from 20 million to 2 million by the end of the 16th century. There is reason to suppose that the situation was even worse north of the Rio Grande, where the people's Stone Age technology had not developed the intensive agriculture of their most advanced southern neighbors. Though some peoples in the Michigan area had mastered the smelting of copper for ornamental purposes, they had yet to invent the wheel, and the possibility of creating objects to master the environment had not yet occurred to them. One reason was that their religion emphasized the importance of nature as a phenomenon to be respected rather than exploited. the more so since mankind itself was a part of it. Hence, animals killed for whatever purpose were to have their spirits honored in case of a meeting between them and their killers in the afterlife. Despite the lack of technology and ravages caused by disease, recent estimates suggest that some 500,000 people lived along the eastern seaboard around 1600, and that 30,000 of these resided in the vicinity of the Chesapeake, to which the London Company was now directing its efforts. From a European perspective, the Algonquin-speaking peoples here were in many respects the most advanced, having developed various forms of agriculture. Most notable was their cultivation of Indian corn, beans, and squash, which they sowed one between the other to balance what they took from the soil. They also caught plentiful supplies of fish with nets made from vegetable fibers. Game, also readily available, was snared with traps or hunted with bows and arrows, tipped with shape stone or bone. In general, they enjoyed a balanced and healthy diet. However, their fields were small and sparse in proportion to the available land, because clearing the land was difficult. Trees could be killed by girdling the bark, but this procedure did not remove the stumps. Planting could thus be done only in soil which had long had most of the goodness taken out of it. The inability to practice intensive agriculture meant that only a relatively small population could be supported. As a rule, to European eyes, the North American coast often appeared uninhabited. The American Indians of the Chesapeake lived in fenced villages whose location might vary depending on the season. According to Captain John Smith, one of the first arrivals, whose writing provides much of our information about Virginia in its early years, the buildings and habitation are, for the most part, by the rivers or not far from a fresh spring. The men spent their time mainly in fishing, hunting, or making war. The women and children did the rest of the work, making mats, baskets, and pots. It was the females' task to pound the corn, make their bread, prepare their victuals, gather their corn, and do all the other things necessary in the village itself. Each nation or group of villages was governed by a number of chiefs who deliberated together in a tribal council. At this time, the peoples of the region were being consolidated into a confederation under Powhatan. Chiefs of the Pamunkey Nation. Warfare played an important part in the tribal way of life, though historians have not always agreed as to its purpose. One motivation was religion, for most tribes believed that the spirits of kin slain in battle could not rest until they had been avenged. War also provided a means of controlling territory to ensure game and food reserves. In addition, taking captives was a method of increasing tribal numbers in a period of population decline. All males were initiated into membership of their community by some warlike act against an enemy. However, the warfare was often more symbolic than real. Their numbers were too small to risk genocide, while their weapons were less deadly than European firearms.